Okay. So we're picking up after the Hanukkah of last week. Want to go back to the first essay, paragraph Tzadi Vav, paragraph 96, which is on page 111. The Chaver, the Rav, has just finished explaining to the King of the Khazars, again, this theory which Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi has, the concept of the genetics, of the special genetics of the Jewish people, that starting with Adam HaRishon, there were certain types of people who had this genetic ability to be close to God. They were called Bnei Elokim, the sons of God, again, not Cholila in a Christian sense or anything like that, but in the sense that they had this godly and divine perfection, again, as much as a human being can be perfect, but you know, they had this ability to have this special relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and Adam passed it on to Shes, who passed it on to Enosh, and all of the people listed in Chumash, you know, were the ones who inherited this special trait and passed it on. It was given to Avram, to Yitzchak, to Yaakov. Yaakov gave it to all his sons, and for the first time a nation was created, and the entire nation of the Jewish people are in possession in some way or another of this special genetic ability to be close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And you know, for that reason, even when Jews seem to be sinning, deep down they really have this genetic quality which enables them to be close to Hashem. So says the King of the Khazars in response, and this is where Tzadi Vav picks up, Amar HaKuzari, Zos Be'emes, He Hagedula Hanimsheches Me Adam. Yeah, you're right. Adam HaRishon Taka had this quality, and I can understand that, you know, his descendants, or at least some of his descendants, continued with this. But Adam Haya Hagadol Shebebriyus HaAretz, after all, Adam HaRishon was the choice of all of the creations, you know, during the 6 days of creation. And certainly it makes sense that this greatness should go to you over all of the other creatures in the world, because you are the descendants, both physically and spiritually, of Adam HaRishon. But coming back to what we discussed at the beginning of this conversation, says the King of the Khazars, I know that you Jewish people sinned terribly by building the golden calf, the Egel Azov. So how do these two things square together? How can you tell me on the one hand that the Jewish people are so incredible genetically and they have this built-in capacity to reach out and be close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and at the same time, I mean, here they just heard the voice of God giving them the Aseres HaDibros and Har Sinai, and all of a sudden, within 40 days, they're already descending into idolatry, into Avodah Zarah. How is that possible? I mean, you know, you're telling me that they're so wonderful, they're so wonderful, they're so wonderful. So how do you square that with the Chet HaEgel, with the sin of the golden calf? So here comes the Baal HaKuzari, and it's important to remember that the Baal HaKuzari is one of the earliest of the Rishonim, right? And, you know, because of that, what he writes over here, even though, as we'll see, it's echoed in a lot of ways by the later Rishonim, the Baal HaKuzari is really, I think, the first to really deal with the sin of the golden calf in the way in which he does. Omar HaKuzari, Omar HaChove, says the Rav, Ki ha'umos kulom bizman ahu hayu ovdim tzuros. You should know that all of the nations in those times used to worship images. It was very important in those days. In the Middle Ages, it wasn't so important anymore when the Kuzari is being written. But back in the time of the Tanakh, back in the time when the Torah was given to Klal Yisrael, all of the nations worshipped images. They had to have something concrete, something tangible, in order to pray towards. V'ilu hoyu ha'pilosofim v'yem mofis al yichud v'yalho elokus. If the philosophers had come to people way back when, and they had given them proof about the existence of this one invisible God, the way we believe in, lo hayu omdim mibli tzura shemechavnin aleha, they still wouldn't have been able to have given up the tzura, the image, which they felt was so precious, because they would say, that helps us direct our kavana. Va'omrim lahamonam ki hatzura hazos yidbak bo inyon eloki. The masses believe that this image has something divine about it. And there's some kind of supernatural fashion which clings to this kind of image. Meaning, they couldn't, you know, back in the day, they couldn't imagine a religion that didn't have some kind of image in some way, because the truth is, we can relate to it on some level. It's very, very hard to believe passionately in something which you can't see. It's very, very hard. Right? It's, you know, it's a lot easier to be able to focus on something tangible and put all of one's passions and emotions into this. It's not so hard for us, I mean, because people nowadays, you know, believe in God, you know, believe in an invisible God. The truth is, if one were to be skeptical, you'd probably say, yeah, you know, people say that they believe in an invisible God, but how strong is that belief? You know, the Ovdei Avodah Zarah, back in the time of the Tanakh, were incredibly strong in their belief. They were mistaken in their belief. But the belief which was focused on this tangible object was an incredibly strong and powerful and motivating sort of thing. I mean, you see throughout the Tanakh that the Jewish people are constantly running after Avodah Zarah. So you wonder, I mean, like, what's the big attraction? Why on earth would you think it's so attractive to bow down to an idol? Right? So it's tangible. In other words, if a person is not so religious, all right, so this is the God, that's the God, whatever. It doesn't really matter to the person so much. The more the person is passionate about religion, the more the person needs to connect to something actual, right? And the more the person is going to need something tangible, like an idol, in order to focus them. You know, it's so difficult, says the Kuzari, you know, to imagine certainly for the people of that time to imagine a religion that wouldn't have some kind of tangible form. Umehem. The truth is, says the Kuzari, we do something similar today, even though in the time of the Middle Ages already, you know, the people weren't really worshipping idols, you know, in the way they were in the time of Tanakh. But we have a concept called Mekomos Hakdoshim. We have a concept called holy places. What's the attraction of holy places to people? He says, in a sense, it's the same thing. People like to be able to identify Kedusha with something tangible. Right? So, you know, it's hard for us to relate to the concept of Rachel Imenu in the abstract. So if you go, you know, because Rachel Imenu isn't here. So if you go to the Cave of Rachel, you know, here's a place which helps you focus and think about Rachel Imenu. You know, when you can't, when it's not really there. I mean, why do we put up matzevus, you know, by a beis olam? You know, because, you know, somehow the matzeva is tangible. I mean, we understand the matzeva is not the same thing as the neshama who passed on, but the matzeva helps us focus and remember and think about, you know, the neshama. So this whole concept of Mekomos HaKadoshim, says the Kuzari, can help us understand what the attraction of Avodah Zarah was. I mean, the same way that we can appreciate that, you know, you're in a certain place and you feel that it's special and it's different and that's an attraction. You know, so somebody back in the day in the time of the Tanakh would feel that same kind of energy focused on the item of the idol itself. Right, Chazal.
We can never understand it because we don't have the same need.
Right.
The same Yetzer Hara because of Hashem Yeloi.
Right, so I think what the Kuzari is doing is he's trying to explain it. In other words, Hagam, it's true, the Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah was taken away from us, right? But nonetheless, let's try to understand what the attraction would have been. In other words, we don't really feel that attraction anymore. But let's try to understand, I think that's what the Kuzari is saying, let's try to understand what would prompt someone. You know, it wasn't just an irrational Avodah Zarah, right? It was an Avodah Zarah that you know, addressed something which we can feel to an extent, you know, even today. So that's what he says, Umehem, Mishem Yaches Oso El Ruchnis Kochav Min HaKochavim, Ochayo Min HaChayolim, Umareches Mazel V'Zul Azeh. Some people would say that the image is somehow connected to something up in the heavens. In other words, they weren't stupid. I mean, you know, that's the Kuzari says. You know, you think that they were really so primitive, they thought that the wood, you know, or the stone was really a god in its own right. Yeah, they understood, or at least some of them understood that that wasn't the case. But they thought that the stone or the wood was a tangible representation of some kind of force that was connected up to some kochav, to some star or something up in the heavens, and that by connecting to this physical image down on earth, they were somehow through that being able to access the koach, you know, the power which was in the celestial body, this star or whatever it was. And they wouldn't really be able to appreciate religion back in those days unless they had some kind of tzura, some tangible image which they'd be able to focus on. Okay, so how does that relate to the Egel HaZov? So he says as follows. When Moshe Rabbeinu went up in Har Sinai, what the people hoped he would bring down was some kind of image, not to replace God, right? Because they believed totally in the Ribbono Shel Olam, but they were hoping that Moshe Rabbeinu would provide them with something tangible to focus them, to direct them towards the worship of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And it goes on the Kuzari to say an amazing thing. They already had something like that. The Anan, the cloud, or the Esh that accompanied the Jews as they went through the Midbar, was a tangible item that helped the Jews focus on God. We usually don't think in those terms. We usually think it was a protection, it was a siman, maybe a sign to the other nations that God was watching over the Jewish people, it was a barrier. So the Kuzari is saying, beyond all of those reasons, it also helped the Jews worship God. When they saw the Esh, when they saw the fire going in front of them, you know, they knew that the fire wasn't God himself, but by looking at the fire, this was something tangible that would remind them of, you know, of the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I mean, Mashal Amad Dover Doma, you come into a shul, right? The shul has a beautiful Aron Kodesh, you know, up in the front. So we all understand that the Aron isn't God. But at the same time, the fact that there's something beautiful there which we know represents the Torah, you know, which is the gift of God, having the Aron there makes the place feel holy, right? If you come into a building, you know, every once in a while they make a minyan in a room, you know, where there is no Aron Kodesh, right? So you feel lacking, you know, it doesn't feel right. It feels like something is missing when the Aron Kodesh is not there. Why? I mean, the Ribbono Shel Olam is there, Ribbono Shel Olam is there with or without an Aron Kodesh. Right, but you understand, having the Aron Kodesh there is something tangible. Not Chas V'Shalom that you're worshipping the Aron Kodesh, but it's something tangible to focus you, to direct you, and to help you connect in some way to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So Bnei Yisrael were waiting for Moshe Rabbeinu to come down from Har Sinai and give them something like an Aron Kodesh. Similarly, when Moshe Rabbeinu spoke to God and the cloud would descend upon him, the Jewish people saw that cloud as a tangible way of not representing God, but of helping them focus their concentration, right? A tangible sign of the presence of God. And the Jewish people would bow in the direction of that cloud, so as to bow to Hashem. When the people heard the Aseres HaDibros, and Moshe Rabbeinu went up in Har Sinai to bring down the Luchos, v'lasos lohem aron, lios lohem dover nirish yechavnu negdo, they were anxious that Moshe Rabbeinu would bring down both the Luchos and the Aron, because these two would be tangible things which they could use to focus their kavana towards Hashem. Shebo yeh habris leilokim v'abriya haribonis. So, because in the Aron would be the tangible representation of the Bris Elokim, of God's covenant, the Bria Elokis, the divine creation, wrote Saloma Haluchos. Right? The Luchos, the Pasuk says, Haluchos Masa Elokim Hema. You know, they were formed by God Himself. They are a divine creation. as directly formed by God as anything else. So the Luchos would have been a source of tremendous honor that they would have shown, and not just honor, they would have focused on the Luchos as a way of coming to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Just reading the next paragraph. The Nisharu Ha'am Mitzapim Loredes Moshe Ve'Hema and Yonam. So everybody's patiently waiting around for Moshe Rabbeinu to come down from Har Sinai. Lo Shinu Ta'aram Ve'ed Yom V'Gdem Asher Amu Bohem B'Yom Asher Amdu Bohem Yom Ma'im Et Har Sinai. They didn't change, he says in a tremendous thing, they didn't change their clothes or their jewelry for 40 days. They were just, in the state of eager anticipation. Right? They're standing there waiting, mamish. They didn't get into pajamas. They're in their Har Sinai clothes. They're still in the same clothes that they heard Maimon Har Sinai from. Where does he learn this out from? Apparently, from the after the Egel, it says that the Jewish people took off the jewelry mehar chorev. So Chazal famously say that they were given crowns by Maimon Har Sinai, by the angels, and now they took off the crowns. I think he's interpreting just on Pashat Pshat. What does it mean they took off their jewelry? They had put on jewelry for the occasion of Maimon Har Sinai, and they had kept it on the whole time, and now for the first time after the Chet HaEgel, they took it off. So that's the Kuzari is learning, just on the level of Pashat Pshat. The Jewish people didn't change their clothes for 40 days after Maimon Har Sinai. They were just, they were shaking with anticipation. They couldn't wait for Moshe Rabbeinu to come down from Har Sinai to give them this thing which they'd be able to focus on and, worship HaKadosh Baruch Hu properly. Ach nisharu b'tchunasa mamtinu l'Moshe u'boshish mehem arboim yom. They're patiently waiting for Moshe, and 40 days go by, and the man's missing. He didn't take any food with him, and when he left them, he left with the understanding that he would be gone for that day and be back that day. Now, by the way, so here the Kuzari is saying pshat a little bit differently than the famous medrash which Rashi quotes. Rashi understands they knew from the beginning that he was going to be gone for 40 days, except they miscalculated the 40 days.
Right?
In other words, they miscounted which was day one and which was day zero. Right? So they were off by a day. But the Kuzari doesn't learn that way. The Kuzari understands, and again, if you read the simple pshat in the Chumash, Moshe Rabbeinu goes up in Har Sinai into the cloud. The impression they have is, stay here, right? I'll be right back. And you can understand, according to that, why they don't change their clothes. Why should we change our clothes? Why should we take off our jewelry? He's coming right back. He's coming right back. 20 days later, he's coming right back.
He take the pills.
That he was coming right back? If you look in the psukim, it doesn't say anything about it. He tells them, oh, by the way, I'll be gone for 40 days. It says he goes up to the mountain. So I don't know, if you go up and you don't say anything, the assumption is, I'll be right back.
Did he know he was gone for 40 days?
That's a good question. So according to the Kuzari, it's not Poshut that he knew. According to the Kuzari, it sounds like... I'm sorry?
It's the first time I hear a Pelsh.
Right, but that's how he understands the Psukim. And again, it's an incredible thing. The truth is, the way he describes it, it shows you the tremendous praise of the Jewish people. Right? Because they think he's coming back, I'll be back by the end of the day. 40 days go by, they don't change their clothing, they're still waiting. It's like you wait at the train station. Okay, so the next train. 40 days go by, okay? You figure, okay, there have been a lot of trains already in that last time. Right? So they're waiting 40 days for a man who they think is coming back, any minute now. As Gavra HaMachshava, so finally, after 40 days, Gavra HaMachshava HaRak, Sasa HaMon, HaHu HaGadol. Right? So finally, after 40 days, they begin to have this evil, terrible thought that, oh, maybe he's not coming back at all, and maybe we should do something else. V'ischilu HaMon HaAm LaYichalek Machlokos U'marbim HaEitzos VaMachshavos. So finally, after 40 days, and again, it's incredible the way he describes it, that they held out for 40 days and did nothing. Right? Again, if you start with the starting point, with the assumption that they thought he was coming back within a few hours, The fact that they waited 40 days without anything is incredible. Right? I mean, it's a month and a half. You know, they wait a month and a half for a man who they thought is coming back in an hour. So finally, after 40 days, they start, you know, fighting among themselves. Okay, what should we do? So finally, some people suggested, you know, what were we waiting for Moshe Rabbeinu to do? We were waiting for him to bring back something tangible. All right, well, he's obviously not coming back. So we still have our problem. We still need something tangible in order to approach the Ribbono Shel Olam. God forbid, they never sought to deny the God who had taken them out of Egypt. But they need something in front of them in order to focus them whenever they tell over the wonders that God performed for them. You know, if they want to tell a story, right? When I took speech in college, one of the things they have you do is give a speech with a prop. You know, you need to have something tangible to give the speech, because you have to point to it and say, okay, you know, this is, and you see this and you see that. They felt they needed a prop. Not that the prop was God, but they felt they needed, or some of them felt they needed a prop. They're going to tell over the story of how God took us out of Mitzrayim. We have to be able to have something tangible while we tell the story, because that makes the story come alive and we'll be able to really get into it. So, for instance, Kasher Asu haPlishtim ba'aron ki amru ki ha'elokim sham, just as the Plishtim did with the Aron. Right, the famous story in the beginning of Sefer Shmuel, the Plishtim capture the Aron, and they recognize that the Aron isn't God, but they see that the Aron has the power of God. They associate the Aron with Hashem. Ad kedekach, they put the Aron in the base Dagon, in the base Avodah Zarah. And, you know, the idol topples in front of the Aron, and they say, this Aron, there's something divine about this Aron. Says the Kuzari, the Plishtim also understood the Aron isn't God himself, but the Aron helps us focus on God. Then he says something fascinating. V'kasher anu osim bashomayim, uv'chol dover she'anu yodim she'tnuaso omnom hi b'chefetz elokim, mibelim mikre v'lo ratzon el adam v'lo teva. Says, you know, we do the same thing, says the Kuzari, because we use Shamayim as a way of conveying the idea of God. Right? A person has what? Yiras Shamayim, fear of heaven. What's meant fear of heaven? Thinks the heaven is going to fall in? Well, he doesn't have fear of heaven, he has fear of the Ribbono Shel Olam. Right? But we
focus.
We use
mala.
Right. In other words, you know, if you look up, I'm looking at the ceiling. I'm not any more likely to see the Ribbono Shel Olam by looking up at the ceiling. But somehow, we associate up high with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because it's a useful thing for us in order to focus our attention on something. Right? In other words, you know, we talk about God in heaven. The Ribbono Shel Olam is everywhere. It's not he's not in the sky any more than he is down here on earth. But we use that concept of talking about Shamayim, you know, the Himmel, you know, we use all of these concepts, you know, because they're useful to give us something to focus on in order to recognize the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Right. So we'll have to see. Right. See, the Kuzari, in the end, is going to be faced with the question. Well, okay. So then, in the end of the day, what's the difference between, let's say, the Aron and the Avodah Zarah? Right. I mean, because after all, the function of the Aron is to be a tangible representation, not of God, but to connect us to God. You know, the Avodah Zarah is also supposed to be a tangible thing to connect us to God. So what's really the difference then between the Aron and the Avodah Zarah? why is one a mitzvah and one of the biggest averus that one could possibly imagine?
Right?
Oh, so we'll get to it. He's going to have a very unique way of understanding that. V'chatosam hoisa b'tzir asher nesar aleim. What was the sin of the golden calf? It wasn't Avodah Zar. And as it wasn't rejecting God and replacing HaKadosh Baruch Hu with some other deity. No, it was just a tzir. It's just that they made an image to help them connect to God. Which again is wrong.
But in the Torah it says that they said that the Eidel was the one who took them out of Mitzrayim.
Oh, okay, so we'll get to that. Yeah, we'll get to that. Right. Okay. Right. So we'll get to it. We'll get to it. Right. So, chatosam hoisa b'tzir asher nesar alem. Again, they sinned. Right. I mean, they weren't allowed to make an image to help them connect to God either. But at least you can understand it was a different type of sin. It's not a sin of rejecting God. That would not be worthy of the Jewish people. It's a sin of trying to create something to help them connect to God, which they weren't supposed to do. All right, it's still a very big avera, and we see the terrible consequences for the cheto ego, but you know, it knocks down the severity of the sin somewhat. V'sheyichasu inyan eloki el masha asu biyadam uritzonam mibili mitzvas elokim. And the biggest sin was that they attributed special qualities to something they had done on their own, without God telling them to do it. This sentence is incredibly important, because it goes back to the issue we raised a minute ago, and he'll flesh this out a little bit later on. In the end of the day, what's the difference between the Egel and the Aron? The Aron is something tangible to help us focus on God. The Egel is something tangible to help us focus on God. What's the difference? Right? So the difference lies in exactly one thing, says Rabbi Yudah HaLevi. The Jews were told to make an Aron, they weren't told to make an Ego. That's it. In other words, you can imagine a very strange thing, right? In other words, according to the Kuzari, had a Kodesh Baruch Hu come down at Har Sinai and said, make an Egel HaZahav, it would have been a mitzvah to make an Egel HaZahav. Right? In other words, the whole problem of the Egel HaZahav is not so much... Right, the fact that they did it themselves. Now this goes back to a theme that the Yehuda HaLevi loves, right? Remember the fool in the pharmacy, right? The mashal which we had earlier, right? If you don't know what you're doing, you can't play around with the medicines. In other words, the Torah's rules are from God. If you try to apply them on your own, you will make a big mess. Right? So even though you think, well, it's exactly the same thing. Both medicines. This is a blue bottle. This is a blue bottle. I mean, you know, if they're both blue bottles, you know, why should there be a difference? I mean, they look exactly the same. You know, I mean, C2O, H2O. I mean, you know, okay, it's they're all pretty much the same thing, right? No, so again, if you don't know what you're doing, you're going to play around with these medicines, and Rahman al-Islam, you'll kill somebody. So that's the same thing over here. You think that an Aron and an Egel are exactly the same thing? You think there's no difference between an Egel and the Amud Onan, or the Amud Esh, that went before the Jews in the desert? That's the biggest sin of the Cheto Egel. The biggest sin of the Cheto Egel was that they took it into their own hands, and they presumed to know what would be the best thing for them religiously. You can't do that. What's best for us religiously is what God tells us to do. If we're going to do things on our own, you know, so then we're going to run into problems. Ve'esh lahem hisnaslus v'mashikodom mehamachlokes b'nehem. Right? The truth is, although, again, in the end of the day they sinned, but you can excuse them to some extent because this was the result of a fight that broke out among them. Some people thought the Egel HaZahav would be a good idea. A lot of people, he's going to say the majority, rejected the idea that the Egel HaZahav would be a good idea. V'lo higiyu ovdav el shloshes alfei ish michlal sheish miyos elef shehayu. I'll give you the proof that most of the Jewish people didn't see the Egel HaZahav as being Avodah Zarah, because how many people are killed, you know, in the aftermath of the Egel HaZahav? 3,000 people. 3,000 people worship the Egel, the Pasuk tells us. Alright, that sounds like a lot. But if you consider that they were 600,000 people, right? So it's three, you know, it's 3 out of 600, right? So again, it's terrible, but percentage-wise, a very small portion of the Jewish people are actually involved in the worship of the Egel Hazav. Many of them may have been complicit, you know, they silently went along with it, but in terms of how many people actually worshipped it and saw it as a god, 3 out of every 600. All right, so that's, you know, in the big picture, that's not a huge amount of people. Abel hisnatzlus hagedolim shesiu ba'asoso hoy. Okay, but now you come back to a problem which plagues all the mefarshim. There were chashuva people who were involved in making the Egel Hazav, Aaron HaKohen, right? So, you know, you want to say whatever you want to say about the people, but how can you justify Aaron's participation? Ba'avur shiyeiro'e hamamre mehama'amin kidei laharog hamamre ha'oved oso. The whole kavana, the whole intent of Aaron, says Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi, was to go along with their plans in order to weed out the Jews who would want to worship this Egel Hazav. Shiyeiro'e hamamre mehama'amin, in order to distinguish the rebel from the believer, in order to take this opportunity to kill the rebels. V'nechshav lahem la'avam neshahotziyo amirim in hakoach hasof and olgbulah maisa. So Aaron, of course, is considered to have done something wrong. But again, it's not that he did wrong by encouraging Avodah Zarah. He made a calculation which was incorrect, meaning he was miskaven l'shem shamayim. He thought to do everything for the right intention. What was the right intention? He wanted to go along with their plans because he figured, you know, this way I'll be like a double agent. You know, in other words, I'll go along with their plans. You know, I'll be what does the FBI call it? You know, like you know, he's the guy who's involved in the sting. You know, he's the fellow. He's got to pretend, you know, to sell the drugs. You know, let's say to the you know, to the cartel. And this way, he can turn around at the end of the day, and he can tell the police, you know, can tell the FBI who exactly is involved in all of this wrongdoing. So they come to him. He sees that they have this tendency; they want to do something wrong. So he plays along with them. So now he can turn around, and Moshe Rabbeinu comes down and say, "Oh, it's this group and this group and this group and this group and this group. They're the ones who are responsible." So the Torah says he was wrong in doing that. You know, that's not a good enough reason to encourage the performance of a sin. Okay, so he was wrong. But, you know, Chag L'Hashem Mochar. Right, so Rashi understands that way, that he's trying to postpone it. Right, this is a different pshat. This pshat, which Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi says, actually originates with Rav Sadia Gaon. Rav Sadia Gaon is the first one to say, what's the explanation for Aaron's actions? You know, how do we defend Aaron? So he says Aaron meant L'shem Shemaim. He meant to try to create a litmus test to determine, you know, who's faithful and who's not faithful. Okay, so it was wrong. He shouldn't have done that. But at least, you know, there are averus and there are averus. At least this is a mistake which is defensible. You know, which at least, you know, you can understand he had the right intentions. You know, even if in the end of the day how he carried it out was incorrect. Right, I mean, all the Mefarshim struggle with the fact. I mean, right after the Chet HaEgel, 3,000 people are being killed and dying. And so how come Aaron HaKohen is never really called to task for his role in the Chet HaEgel? And he gets off with a slap on the wrist, Aaron HaKohen. I mean, you would expect that he would be punished in the biggest way possible. So all the Mefarshim basically have to say, look, Aaron HaKohen never really went along with it. To whatever extent he was involved, he had some other cheshbon, some other calculation, which was motivating his action. So this answer, that he was motivated by trying to weed out who's really devoted to God and who's just pretending, you know, that's an answer which originates with Rav Sadia Gaon, and Rav Yehuda HaLevi accepts it. V'lo hoya ha'ovan ha'hu yitzio miklal avodas motzio mimitzrayim. Right? This, you know, the sin of the golden calf was not a rejection of God who took them out of Mitzrayim. Ach hayomiri liktsas mitzvosov. It was a rebellion against the mitzvos of God. Right? Again, not against God himself. They accepted God. They were rebelling against a particular mitzvah of God, namely, kihu yisbar achizer minatsuros, Because God had said, don't make any graven images, don't make any tangible forms. So they made a form which would help them connect to God.
Actually, they didn't make the form.
They
just threw the gold into the fire, and the form made itself.
Right, so I'm not sure that he's working with that medrash. And as that's a medrash Rashi quotes, right? Vayetze ha'egel hazeh, right? I threw it in, and out comes the egel.
But they didn't actually mold it.
Right, right. So again, I'm not sure that he's working with that Maimer Chazal. He may just be working with the pshat. The pshat is that they go by themselves and they make this egel hazeh. That's the pshat. Again, you know, the Chazal have a different understanding, but you know, that's the pshat. So they should have waited. Right? They should have, waited so as not to have built something that they would be drawn after it. Umizbeach the karbonos, and you know, the fact that they built the mizbeach and karbonos was all a mistake. All of that, the building on the mizbeach and the karbonos, was a was the bad advice of the people among them who were influenced by astrology. Again, Chazal talk about the Erev Rav, you know, so they were influenced by the Erev Rav. Choshvu shiyupulosam hasvarios krovos min amasim ha'amitim. And what was the mistake of the Erev Rav? The mistake of the Erev Rav was follow what makes sense to you as opposed to the true actions which are commanded by God. Again, and he says it right out. They acted just like the fool in the pharmacy, as we mentioned above. Right? He draws the connection directly. Right? They think that this is a way to God. You're not supposed to figure out ways to God on your own. You get to God the way God tells you to get to God. You don't try to, you know, to kitzel around on your own and to come up with some other alternative way which makes sense to you to come to Hashem. Shenichnas bechanus harofe, just like the fool we talked about who went into the pharmacy, vehemis ha'anoshim asher hayim o'ilam berefuah sahim kodim lochem, and he ended up killing people by giving them the wrong medicines. That's exactly what the people who, you know, wanted to do the cheito egel, you know, ended up accomplishing. Im shlo hoysa kavonas ha'am latseis mi'avodas ha'elokim. So you see, in the end of the day, you know, as mistaken as they were, they thought they were serving God. They didn't think they were putting aside the worship of God. That's why they went to Aaron and they asked him to help. Because if you think about it, I mean, here it points out also. Let's say they really did want to worship Avodah Zarah. Let's say that was their intent with building the ego. Wasn't it kind of stupid to go to Aaron? They're going to go to Aaron, a Kohen, you know, who's the second in command in this Jewish religion, and go to him and say, by the way, we decided we're going to take another religion. You know, we're not interested in the God who sent you to Mitzrayim to take us out and enabled you to do the plagues, you know, the 10 Makos in Mitzrayim. No, we're going to go for a different religion. Aaron HaKohen is the last person in the world you would go to, you know, to try to get him on your side. I mean, he's the enemy. He's affiliated with Yiddishkeit, right? I mean, you know, it's like the people in the shul want to make a breakaway, you know. So, you know, they go to the Rav and they say, you know, we're making a breakaway shul. We're wondering if you could join us this Shabbos for a minyan, right? It's ridiculous. I mean, you know, you want to make a breakaway shul is one thing, but the rabbi is the wrong guy to ask, you know, to come and have you join in the shul. So Aaron HaKohen's the wrong person. Why'd they go to Aaron? It only makes sense that they went to Aaron if they didn't really think that they were worshipping Avodah Zarah. They think they're worshipping God, and this is just a convenient way. You know, what they think is correct in worshipping HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Ve'alkein siya ba'asoso, v'nesham ba'otsa'oso mir'yeya min ha'koach l'maisa. Right? So, Aaron HaKohen helped them out, as we said before, but he was punished for, you know, enabling them to carry this thing out. I just want to take a pause for a minute and talk about some of the psukim by the Egel Azov. So, I mean, the Kuzari is very, very adamant. It wasn't a god. It wasn't a substitute for God. It was just an image to help them focus on the Ribbono Shel Olam himself. Does that fit in with the psukim? Right? I mean, in the psukim...
Isn't that the Chet Ha'Egel is the worst sin that the Jewish people committed?
Yeah. No, he's not saying it wasn't the sin, and he's not saying it wasn't a terrible sin. But you shouldn't think it was the sin of rejecting God. They didn't reject God. They made a very big mistake. According to the Kuzari, the big mistake they made was thinking they could know on their own how to come to God. Yeah. And that's a terrible mistake, right? But understand, it's not the mistake of the rejection of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So, does that fit in with the Psukim? They go to Aaron, and they say, Kum asei lanu Elohim asher yelchu lefoneinu. Go and make an Elohim that will go in front of us. Right? So, well, that doesn't sound like the Kuzari at all. The Kuzari says they weren't making an alternate to God. They were making just an image, you know, to help them focus. So point out the later Rishonim on Chumash who pick up with something similar to this idea. You know, Elohim in Tanakh doesn't necessarily mean God. Right? Elohim is a word which means judges. It means anyone powerful. Go make for us a leader, a force, which will go out in front of us. Elohim doesn't have to mean HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In fact, what happens with when they build the Egel HaZahav, Vayar Aaron, Vayivan Mizbeach Lefonov, right? So Aaron builds the Mizbeach, Vayikra Aaron Vayomar, so Aaron calls out and he says after the Egel HaZahav is built, Chag Leyud Kei Vovke Mocha. Now Yud Kei Vovke is not just the generic word for God, it means Hashem Yisbarach. So Aaron, what are you doing? They just built an Egel HaZahav and you're getting up and saying let's make a Chag for Yud Kei Vovke, for the God who took us out of Egypt, right? Who revealed himself as Yud Kei Vovke. They're going to stone you. I mean, they're making a substitute for God. No, so that pasuk, the Rishonim point out, when Aaron HaKohen says, Chag l'yud kei vav kei machar, it means that the Jewish people have not rejected Hashem. They haven't rejected yud kei vav kei, because otherwise, that would be the most ridiculous statement to make. Right? Obviously, they see the Egel HaZahav as somehow enhancing their service of Yud Kei Vav Kei, of Hashem Yisparach. They don't see it as a substitute. This is, again, as the Kuzari says, this is a way of getting them to focus their attention so that they can serve Yud Kei Vav Kei, they can serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu better. Right? So again, if you go through the Psukim carefully, right, you see many things like that reinforce the opinion of the Kuzari. They weren't really rejecting HaKadosh Baruch Hu through the Chet Egel. They sinned, right? But the nature of the sin is not rejecting Hashem and Avodah Zarah. It's not that they're rejecting Hashem in favor of something else. They have a mistake, but that's not the mistake in particular. They still believe in Yud Kei Vav Kei even after all is said and done. Right? V'adavar ha'hu ha'ya gadol ma'od be'ineinu. The reason that we think that the Chet HaEgel is such a terrible sin, we can't even begin to understand it, is Mnei She'ein Bazman HaZed Suros Nevalos Berov HaUmos. Because nowadays people don't worship images anymore the way they did in the time of the Tanakh. So we find it hard to imagine that they would get so worked up, we need some kind of image in order to help us worship HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We don't need an image, we just, you know, we come into Shul and we do whatever we do, you know. We try to daven, our minds wander, we talk to the person next to us, you know, whatever we do exactly in trying to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But back in the day, so they were very into this idea of images. We're not. So since we're not, we can't really understand, you know, the draw of the Chet HaEgel. V'hoya kal bazman hahu, mimnei shehayu osim kol ha'umos tzuros la'avod osam. Right? It was so easy in that time for them to fall into this trap because that's what everybody did. So Says the Kusari, you want to bring home what they did. Let's imagine instead of building an Egel HaZahav, they built a shul. Right? Let's imagine that Moshe Rabbeinu was gone, and they decided on their own they're going to build a temple. They're going to build a shrine. They're going to build a shul. Now that also would have been wrong, because they're not allowed to do anything unless HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells them to do it. Right? But that at least we'd be able to understand, because we understand, even though God is everywhere, we understand that we need special buildings to help us focus on praising God and praying to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We understand that you feel differently when you come into a shul to daven than when you're, you know, davening mincha in a phone booth, if they still have phone booths, right? You know, when you're davening mincha in a phone booth, you know, it doesn't feel quite the same, right? Not the least of because, you know, when you step back from Shemoneh Esrei, you bang into the door, right? But, you know, we understand that, you know, the bias of Beis HaKnesses, of Beis HaMikdash, makes us feel different, right?
They were told to build a Beit HaShem.
Oh, but only later. In other words, the Kuzari basically implies, had they decided instead of an Egel HaZahav, you know what, let's build a Beis HaMikdash, it would have been the same Aveira.
Right,
because they weren't told. And they had no right to do that. So in other words, it's not the Egel HaZahav itself, yeah. Can't do anything without being told it. Right? So then we would appreciate that. In other words, we would appreciate, wow, that's not such a big deal. That's not a rejection of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They want to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu better. Okay. So what we build now as the shul, they made an Egel HaZahav. You know, for them that was the equivalent. That's what helped them draw close to Hashem, the same way the shul helps us. Where the Beis HaMikdash, you know, helped our forefathers to come closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Nowadays we think it's great to have shuls all over the place, but in the time of the Tanakh it was a sin to build other shuls, so to speak. There was only one bayis, the Beis HaMikdash, and if you build a house of worship somewhere else in Eretz Yisrael, so there was a name for that. That was called bamos, private altars. And whereas you and I might think private altars, what could be better than that, right? I mean, what could be better, you know, than having a private place, you know, in every town. You know, where you could come and give thanks to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The bamos were a violation of halacha, and the great kings of the Malchus Yehuda destroyed them, and they stamped them out. Right? Why? So, again, HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't want them. He didn't command for these things to be built, even though you would think having a place of worship to God in every single locale would be the most amazing thing that a person could possibly do religiously. I mean, after all, the Kruvim by the Aron are really not so different than the Egel HaZahav. What were the Kruvim? They were images, right? They were, you know, an image of a boy and a girl. You know, these two malachim in the form of a boy and a girl, right? So how come that's mutter? Why is that mutter? And the Egel HaZahav is also. It's only one difference.
Command.
Right. God commanded it. You know, had God theoretically commanded them to build an Egel HaZahav and not Kruvim, so that it would have been a mitzvah to build an Egel HaZahav and an Aveira to build the Kruvim. It's all what HaKadosh Baruch Hu commands. I mean, short of that, there's nothing to talk about.
A good deed is called mitzvah
because it's a tzibur. Right. After all of this defense, of course, the people who made the Egel HaZahav were punished. Again, as you know, he noted before, relatively speaking, it was a small number of people who were really involved in worshipping the Egel HaZahav. Again, 3 out of every 600. By the way, you see that the people were not rejected by God. The man kept coming down. I mean, you would think I mean, the man was a miraculous thing. You would think that if the people were really guilty of rejecting God, God would have said, okay, enough with the man. I'm not sending you any man anymore. You reject me. I mean, I'm not going to give you this special food. The Anonei HaKavod, you know, the fire at night still surrounded the people. They still got nevuah. All of the gifts that were given to them were retained. Nobody took them away. The only thing that was lost after the Chet HaEgel was the luchos. They were smashed. And even that, they were replaced. Right? So basically, by the end of the story, everything is status quo. Right? Now, if they... Right? I'm sorry? It's not so terrible. I mean, if you think about what the punishment could have been, God could have said, okay, I'm taking away my Anonei HaKavod, I'm taking away my mon, and you guys can sit here and fend for yourselves in the desert.
Yeah, right.
Not that kind of a God to starve people, to punish them like that.
Alright, you know, so some quick lightning bolts, and you know, take them all out, right? I mean, you know, if you think about what the punishment could have been, right? If they really rejected HaKadosh Baruch Hu,
it would have been
a lot worse. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu stays with the people, the Be'er. He doesn't mention the Be'er, but I mean, all of these things which were miracles continue to be miracles. Right. So again, he walks a fine line, because in the end of the day, it is a big sin. It's clear from the psukim that it's a big sin. But what he's doing with it, he's using it to say, you see what a big sin it is to do something on your own without God telling you to do it. And that's such a big aveira that, chas v'shalom, it potentially could have led to the destruction of the Jewish people had Moshe Rabbeinu not begged on their behalf. Right? So again, it's a fine line, because on the one hand, he's downplaying the aveira. On the other hand, the Chumash itself plays up the aveira, which makes us realize, according to his understanding, the real great Avera over here is doing what you think is right. If you do what you think is right, you are the fool in the pharmacy, and you're going to run into the same problem over and over and over again. Exactly right. A karma which God doesn't command. Also, Amar Akuzari, this is just a clincher. So after this whole explanation, why is this whole thing with the golden calf here? I mean, it seems like very much a digression. So you'll see how it comes back in. So says the king of the Kesers. Kfar azarto atsasi b'masha ola b'dayti b'masha ro'isi b'chalomi ki ein ha'odam agiel ha'inyin ha'eloki ela b'davar eloki. Wrote Salomar b'maisim shi'etzavim ho'elokim. Oh, you've confirmed for me what I saw in my dream. Because what was the dream of the king of the Kesers? The Malach came to him and said, your heart's in the right place, but you have to do the right deeds, the right actions. So says the king of the Kesers, oh, now you confirmed this idea for me. There's such a thing as the right actions. Because you might have said that as long as your heart's in the right place, what you do doesn't really matter, as long as you have a good intent of reaching out to God. And the whole point of the Kusari is, no, that's not true at all. Right? It matters specifically what you do. If you come into with the best of intents, you know, you walk into the pharmacy with the best of intents, you want to get better, but you take the wrong medicine and you drink it, your intent doesn't matter at all. Right? You got to do the right thing. So in other words, this whole story of the Egel HaZav serves to reinforce the Kuzari's basic message that, you know, we can only do what HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells us. We can't make up things on our own, right? And if we try, we're just going to hurt ourselves in the process. So we'll pick up Ez Hashem next week with a little more on this topic, but we've seen kind of a Dovah Sholem, this whole presentation of the Egel HaZav. And again, it's not just in isolation, but it fits into the overall picture which the Kuzari has.